It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Coming up in about an hour from now, who? Steve Hilton from the Daily California Podcast and Fox News will be joining us, mostly, you know, talking about issues here in California, but, you know, he's fine to go all over the place, and so are you, in terms of joining us when Steve is here. Criminal charges look like they're on the way for Alec Baldwin. That's a report came out yesterday. The report is detailing several recent moves made by the district attorney, Mary Carmack Altois, that indicate that she is planning to prosecute the actor in connection with that killing of a cinematographer on the set of his film called Rust. Now, she filed an emergency request last week, the DA, asking the New Mexico Board of Finance for $635,000 to support up to four possible criminal cases that she indicated could arise out of the ongoing investigation into the shooting. State Board approved half that request, $317,000, to assist in the funding for a special prosecutor, special investigator, experts, blah, blah, blah. The prosecutor said that up to four people could be facing charges. Whoa. And she also noted that they might not all be found criminally liable. We'll be requesting a special appropriation for the rest of the money. One of the possible defendants, obviously, is Alec Baldwin. Now, she did not name the other members of the cast and crew who could be under investigation, but she, you know, did list a number of possible charges, saying that her office was certainly looking into all of the homicide statutes and any gun statute under New Mexican criminal law. This is going to get interesting. And she also stated, you know, the requested funds would be used to finance up to four, again, separate jury trials pursuant to the shooting that killed Hutchins and wounded the director, Joel Souza. Forgot about him. You know, a full report from the Santa Fe County Sheriff's Office based upon the lengthy investigation is expected to be released in the coming weeks. Now, the DA, the prosecutor, did not say for certain that she intended to file criminal charges, but she wants the funding in place before the report's release in the event that prosecution's deemed warranted. Quote, experts in firearms, handling of firearms on movie sets, safety protocols on movie sets, they all must be retained immediately. Duh. So, when this happens, I think it's one we need to follow along with. This is the type of thing that could set precedent in this country for this type of activity where there is, you know, a gun used in a fictitious situation that winds up killing somebody. What do you do with that, you know? I mean, it's a movie. Everybody signed waivers, I'm sure. What do you do with that? So this is going to be a multi-headed, complicated little dragon once they start rolling with it. Now, another name in the news, Brett Favre. Have you heard this story? The former, who was he with? Green Bay. The quarterback. The pitcher, Ray. No, the quarterback. Well, he throws the ball. He's already under the microscope for a $5 million volleyball facility he allegedly sought via a Mississippi welfare agency. Huh? Yeah. But now it's alleged he also sought $1.5 million from the same agency for an indoor football practice facility for the University of Southern Mississippi. Okay, well, what's wrong here? Favre is allegedly part of a funding scandal for seeking cash from a Mississippi welfare agency through his contact with the state's former governor, Phil Bryant. The money was reportedly redirected from temporary assistance for needy families. That's a big fund in the Mississippi Department of Human Services. And according to the federal rules, those funds are not supposed to be used for any kind of construction project. Still, text messages between Favre and Governor Bryant show the two discussing the transfer of these exact funds for Favre's project. Not good. The text also revealed that Brett Favre was working on getting an indoor football training facility built for an additional $1.5 million of the same funding. And the text messages show that Favre had an idea to build the training facility as a way to entice the NFL great Deion Sanders' son to the University of Mississippi. And could it be that's what this is all about? I picked up Deion Sanders and his son, going to be a junior in high school, and he plays QB, Favre telling Bryant back in July of 2019. He has at least 30 offers thus far, including us. Now, Deion and I have been great friends since 91. We have great respect for each other. And I suspected Deion's son asked where the indoor facility was, and I said, we don't have one. We are hoping to break ground on one in less than 2 years. And I know we have the volleyball center to complete first, and I'm asking a lot. So says Brett Favre. Now, Sanders' son eventually chose to go to Jackson State, after all that, and not the University of Southern Michigan, Mississippi. So the text between the two, the governor and Brett Favre, eventually have been submitted to the court in a filing as, you know, a part by the ex-governor, as a part of a lawsuit filed by the Mississippi Department of Human Services against two nonprofits and other individuals, including Favre. Now, neither Bryant or Favre is indicted for the funding scandal, nor have they been charged with any wrongdoing. But the FBI has also questioned Brett Favre over that additional $1.1 million he received in speaking fees. However, this rather well-known QB never gave the speeches and was ordered by the Mississippi State Auditor to repay the money with interest. Favre did pay the $1.1 million back, but he's not paid the $228,000 in interest. Ouch. Ouch. So to have that and those other two, you know, numbers hanging over his head, I have to say to Brett Favre, good luck. Again, he's not been accused of any wrongdoing. But what he did was, I mean, unethical. Not an ethical thing to do with, you know, Mississippi welfare money. What can you do? I mean, welfare is so easily manipulated. Russia, the anti-surveillance whistleblower, the accused spy, Edward Snowden. Russia has granted him all the citizenship he could possibly want yesterday, personally, in a decree signed by Vladimir Putin. Now, this former NSA contractor was among 75 nationals given Russian citizenship with a stroke of Putin's pen. He's been living there since about 2013, I think. This is when he fled after leaking classified documents that revealed, you know, the mass surveillance of American citizens by their own intelligence apparatus. You know that one well by now. Now, the Russian passport was granted at Snowden's request, according to Dmitry Peskov, the Kremlin spokesperson. Snowden said in 2020 that he would be seeking dual Russian and U.S. citizenship along with his wife, American Lindsay Mills. The couple's son, born later in Russia, is a Russian citizen by birth. Russian law does not require prospective passport holders to renounce their prior citizenship. And there's no indication that you know, Snowden has. But he faces major espionage charges here in the USA. And he's previously said, you know, he would return to our country if he felt that he would receive a fair deal. Now, there's no reaction from Snowden, whose name appears without Kremlin comment, in a Putin decree conferring the citizenship on a list of at least 72 foreigners. What will he do with this? How does he, gain anything by this? I mean, I don't know. Will he ever come back? I don't know that either. It's break time on KMJ. 490-5858. Steve Hilton at one more time. 800-776-5858. We'll continue on the Ray Appleton program right after this.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now.
It's free.
KMJNow.com.
Hello. If you have anything that you would like to discuss with me, call me, and I'm all yours, baby. 490-5858 and 800-776-5858. Do it to it, please. About 61% of you say that Joe Biden's economy is in recession. Where are you getting that? Only 35% do not believe Biden's economy is in recession. Or, you know, of the 35%, 20% say the economy is souring. 15% are saying it's improving. The hell are they smoking? Overall, 67% believe it's Biden's fault personally. Dr. Penbera as well. They believe that it's his fault that we're on the wrong track. Bad juju. Since Biden has assumed office, you, me, Americans have lost $4,200 in annual income. That's a nasty chunk of change to lose. And Americans always vote with their wallet. So that's going to be heavily reflected in the midterms. Heavily reflected. The poll also revealed the economic issues remained the number one issue for voters in 2022. 45% say the economy and its recovery is the top priority. 28% say social issues, including abortion, are important to them. 28%. Of the 45% who say the economy is their top priority, 20% said reducing Biden's inflation is the greatest priority. 13% say improving the economy generally is the top priority. Gas prices creating jobs notched at 4% each. Now, the poll sampled a number of voters recently, September 17th through the 22nd. And it was pretty evenly split, 37% Democrats, 36% Republican, 27% Independents. And the Consumer Price Index for August revealed that the price of food at home has jumped 0.7% compared with the previous month. Over the past 12 months, groceries have gone up 13.5%. How about gas? What's going on there? Gary, you're on KMJ with gas on your mind. What's up?
Hey there. I'm trying to figure out what does it take to for us to go back where we're using the national gas standard instead of our own blend here in California, choking off everybody financially.
It's going to take an act of the Assembly and the State Senate to reverse that bit of legislation. That's what it's going to take.
Any way to make that happen, or I'm just in a dream world?
I think if there were a grassroots effort and we were able to get enough petitions signed, we could put this on the ballot and do away with it. It would take probably a couple of years to do that, but I feel it needs to be done. Because if we run into a gas shortage, you know, because of formulation, we can't go over, you know, just to Arizona, one state over, and say, sell us some. And I think that's where you're going with this. You know, if we didn't have these formulation things, we could get gas from Nevada, Utah, Arizona, neighboring states who've offered in the past to sell us gas, but we can't because of formulation. So, Gary, you bring up a good point. Thank you. A very good point. And this is, you know, that point of gasoline prices is going to be sharply focused in voters' minds in the midterms. You know, Republicans are expected to take the House now in November. Yesterday, I told you we had a 2-point lead in a generic ballot. It's up more than that today. The 2022 chances are better than ever, according to a number of polls. According to, you know, recent media commentaries on the midterm elections, the GOP is teetering on the edge of a disaster until you look at the polls. Most observers had been predicting a big Republican win, you know, recently as mid-July. But now many experts, so-called experts, put quotes around that, are rushing to count the GOP out, even though the election is still a month away. Now, the leading election analyst, Nate Silver, of 538, gave the Democrats a 70-100 chance to hold the Senate in his recently, you know, reported forecast. Other analysts, likewise, are projecting growing Democratic strength. The impact of these dire predictions might have a significant impact on fundraising, volunteer enthusiasm, voter turnout, resource allocation if party supporters accept the fact the Senate has already lost. However, there are indications that we're probably going to have both. How reliable are these conclusions made on these elections when a major part of the base is determined by polling data conducted 2 months before Election Day? In 2020, media experts had all but written off Susan Collins and her re-election in Maine. By mid-September, a Quinnipiac poll had the challenger, Sarah Gideon, up by 12 points over the incumbent. The New York Times-Siena poll had Collins down by 5. In November, voters delivered her a 9-point victory. In Iowa, Joni Ernst was considered very vulnerable. In mid-September, the Des Moines Register and the Monmouth polls each had Teresa Greenfield leading by 3 points. And in the New York Times-Siena poll, they had her up just by 2. In November, Joni Ernst retained her seat by nearly 8 points. So you can see this polling that's been used to suggest the Democrats are going to be taking the Senate is seriously flawed. Obviously, I think it's, has to do with partisan politics. Duh. Meanwhile, South Carolina polls were pointing to a very tight contest between Lindsey Graham and the challenger, Jamie Harrison. August, September, Quinnipiac had the race tied. CBS News YouGov poll showed Graham clinging to a 1-point lead. What did Graham win by? Do you remember this? How embarrassing these pollsters were? He won by almost 11 points. But of course, 2020 wasn't an isolated case. We saw similar misleading polls in 2018, very famously in 2016, and you know what happened. Since there's no compelling reason to think that this year's polls will be more accurate than in recent cycles, there's significant probability that this year's polls are, I think, likewise understanding of Republican strengths. Several commentators from the left and the right have raised issues in recent days, with many wishing there were a way to prove polling accuracy. I mean, is there a straightforward way of doing this? No, there isn't. There isn't. But every poll out there that has suggested a Democratic win and a Republican loss has failed. So what is that going to mean in the midterms in November? When you've got still some of these same pollsters saying the Democrats will take the Senate. I don't think so. Now, Republicans obviously are not throwing in the towel. Some were panicked by some polling data, but these are the particular polls that are most likely the most inaccurate. If you look at the past 3 cycles. And that tells me that this campaign, even though it's like a month away, is still far from over. This is going to be action-packed. This is one midterm. I cannot wait to come in here and give the results to you the night of the election.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now.
Click the podcast page.
KMJNow.com.
It's free.
All right. Just finishing up a little text here to my son, Rory, back in Indianapolis. Everybody say hello to Rory. He's doing very well. Entertainment and sports columnist for the Indianapolis Star. I'm sorry to see him get out of political writing, though, because he was so fair. So many people have said that the Fresno Bee lost a good one when they let him walk away. And he walked away for a specific reason that I can't get into. He was asked to do something, and that, and then he went to Vegas. That worked for a short time, still doing a political writer. But he always wanted to be a sports and entertainment guy, and he's gotten his wish. So all he does is go to concerts every night. Oh, tough. Does he take Dad? Did we go one time when I was back there? No, because there wasn't anybody I wanted to see. Stevie Nicks was there, but I'm not a fan. So a lot of you are going, are you kidding, Appleton? You didn't go? No, I didn't. Pretty soon, I'm going to be checking out again for my second vacation. Hey, this is the first time ever in my almost 35 years at KMJ, I'm taking every vacation day that's owed me. Because it just seems like I got back. But what I'm going to do is about November the 11th through Thanksgiving, I'm going back to Indianapolis. I'm going to hang out with him, Really enjoyed myself the first time I was back there. And it's going to be extra fun because there's a guy that I worked with forever, A&M Records, that I haven't seen in 20 years. He lives in Maryland now. He's going to drive to Indianapolis, and we're going to hang out there and tell war stories about our days. You know, super trapping everybody. The former Fresno Unified principal, who's been charged with child endangerment and I believe also child abuse, for shoving this young 10-year-old kid, who's a special needs kid, he has entered a plea without a court appearance. Several members of the victim's family went to court yesterday to see him enter the plea, but they left, I guess, maybe probably more upset than when they got there because he didn't show up. You know, he was. And now this has led to a misdemeanor child abuse and endangerment charge about 3 months later. But you won't see him in court. When it came time to enter a plea, he was absent. He let his attorney do it for him. Entering a plea of not guilty to the sole count on the complaint, so says his attorney, Roger Wilson. State law allows, as far as I understand, most misdemeanor defendants to avoid court and let their attorneys handle everything. But Volhart, the former principal's absence, was maybe one more strike against him in the eyes of the victim's family. He's a coward. He's a coward. That's from Anne Frank, who's the boy's guardian. This still makes me feel like he hasn't done anything. That he feels he still hasn't done anything. Why couldn't he be in court like everybody else in court? Don't want to face anybody? Face up to what you did? You did it. It's a done deal. You did it. Now you need to pay the price. And it's on that video that everybody has seen. Now, she treats him like a son, even though she's a guardian. She and her family say they want justice for the boy. Who wouldn't? And they're trying to get a handle on how this is going to look. Justice would be him being charged with a felony and not a misdemeanor. I believe that was from the boy's aunt. Now, he resigned as the principal during the investigation. This was a June incident. But he quickly got the vice principal's job at Tranquility High School. And a lot of people have said, how the hell does that happen? They didn't obviously check him out, nor did he volunteer his previous situation. Now, the California Commission on Teacher Credentialing, that website shows that this guy has an active credential, no adverse reports. We still don't know why he did this, whatever possessed him to do it. Community organizers supporting the victim say they're pushing for that to change. Quote, we're not going to stop until we get his credentials revoked because we don't want a child to go through what his mother is going through here. Now, he faces not a lot of jail time if he's convicted, and the case will be back in court next month. I mean, when I look at this video, and I don't know the letter of the law. Sorry. I see felony. I don't see misdemeanor. I see felony. Now, in the video, it looks like this little boy is really coming at the principal. He's really PO'd about something. But that still should not give any adult creative license to throw the kid across the floor like, you know, it was a wrestling move. I think that's part of the problem with this. Is the frustration with how this has been charged out. Now, I've talked to our new police chief about the where's, why's, and what's of this thing, how long it took to get out, and he's accepted full responsibility, you know, for a couple of things that, you know, went down in the police department. I'm not going to go into detail. He's asked me not to, and I respect that. But I tell you, between me and Paco, I'm very satisfied with what the man said about his role or lack of it or whatever, and we'll just leave it at that. He's a good man. And I don't hear anybody complaining about, you know, that his head needs to roll as police chief. No. Were there mistakes made? Yeah, maybe. But that's for the court also to determine, too, on the civil side as it goes down. But the charging, again, I think is problematic. Whether it's right or it's wrong, I can't tell you. But when I look at the video, I just see felony written all over it. And I believe, again, for the second time, I will say, pardon my little sir echo here, I think that's where people are coming from with their frustration on this. And we'll see where it goes in the court. Could this situation be precedent-setting and led to some kind of changes in the law that make these things charged out, I think, in a more acceptable way? I don't know. We'll see. But I think one of the big bugaboos is the system of checking out these individuals' records, how he can do something like this and then just bounce back with another principal's gig, though to be an assistant in Tranquility. That's worrisome. What do you think? 490-5858, 800-776-5858. Coming up, well, we've got Steve Hilton. Yay. At 1 o'clock today. He, of course, being from the Daily California Podcast and also Fox News. I'm not quite sure where I'm going to lead my brother Steve today, my brother of the English accent. There are a couple of things going on in California. There's some things going on internationally. I think one thing we want to talk about for sure with Steve will be the gas rebate checks, which are allegedly going out next week. I want to see if he has any better handling of the understanding of who's going to be getting what than I do, because this thing has changed so many times. You know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure of what's in it for me. You know, I got a car. I drive. I buy gas. And we will continue on the Ray Appleton Program. News Talk 580-1059-KMJ. I'm glad you're here.
Miss the show? Subscribe to the Ray Appleton Podcast. Get Ray Appleton right now. It's free. Or click the podcast page at kmjnow.com.
Speaking of my son, back in the Indianapolis area, as you may or may not know, I'm going to be a grandfather again the beginning of March. They're having another boy. And so far in the name game, this is a real battle between him and her. She wants Oliver. No. And Rory and I want Rhys, spelled R-H-Y-S, keeping with the Celtic, Irish, English, you know, Ray, Rory, Rowan, Rhys, not Ray, Rory, Rowan, Oliver. Oh, it's a battle. It's a battle. But thanks to Lou Rodman, he's a saint, he has been able to find a company to make an Amish crib for the new baby. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. And the amazing thing is, because of where they live back there, the manufacturer is like 8 miles from Rory's home. It's going to save like $2,600 on shipping. Yay! So, did okay on that one. Just I'm just so into this Amish furniture thing now. It's thanks to Lou Rodman, his new store has got, you know, an Amish department that's practically as big as the old store on Blackstone. They make such good stuff. It's not cheap. I mean, this is the stuff that you buy and you keep in your family forever. You hand it down and forever and ever and ever and ever. And I've gone all out at my place with all of my living room furniture is now Amish. And the dining room set that I bought ages ago, and my granddaughter's like, when you die, that's mine. So, okay, that works. And she can, you know, hand it down too. And this is, but it's this Amish crib makes into a day bed. And then you can add a piece and it becomes a bed. It's remarkable, you know? So if you're looking for Amish cribs, check Lou out, all right? It's just that Michael and I were talking about the mindset of the Amish in the commercial break. It's just like with their farming, you know, with their they're in like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Iowa, Indiana. It's just accepted that your butcher is Amish. You're going to get your chickens and meat from an Amish butcher. I mean, just because it's great. It's just purely organic by every sense of the word. And the mindset is whatever they start a project, whatever it's raising chickens or building cribs, and they just don't stop until it's done the right way 100% of the time, or God will get you. And I love that mindset, and that's why this Amish stuff is so great. So go check out Lou's Place. It's right next to Fashion Furniture, next to Lowe's on that side street off of Blackstone. And just look at the Amish stuff. I mean, to me, it's fascinating. It's in one table in there, like for 22 people. This would be the biggest Thanksgiving you've ever seen. It's in Quarter Sawn Oak, and that is just one of my favorites. And I better shut up. Coming up, Steve Hilton's going to be joining us. And like I mentioned, we'll maybe talk about the gas rebate checks. Also, there are lawmakers hoping to extend the COVID sick leave pay for California workers. Hasn't that gone on long enough? You know, if a worker contracts COVID in California, like I just did, they don't need to use up sick days or vacation time. You've got access to 10 days of very special COVID sick pay. I just took advantage of it. I didn't even know that such a thing existed. Yeah, I was surprised. And again, this is something that is just, I don't want to say solely California, but it's so California. And these lawmakers have advanced AB 152 to Newsom's desk to extend the sick leave for another 3 months, but he hasn't signed it yet. This will be a great one to talk to Steve about. Steve's whole passion, though he's British, as you know, I mean, he's an American citizen now, is California. And he moved to the Bay Area to single-handedly reform that himself. So good luck. So we'll have a number of things to talk about with Steve today. And I wish more of you joined us during his segment so you could talk to him one-on-one. You know, whenever he's on, I'm looking at my Facebook Messenger and I'm looking at my email. And there's like a battery of questions coming to me online when Steve Hilton's on the air with me. Why don't you people call? And again, many of you also note that you're at work and you can't call and you don't want to get the boss mad at you and lose your KMJ privileges. And I get that. I don't want you to lose that either, you know. Flash, just in. Taco Bell wants your old sauce packets so they can be recycled. You know, that may seem to me like the ultimate throwaway item, a sauce packet. But Taco Bell is now telling customers, hold on to them. We want to recycle them and reuse them. Hot, mild, or Diablo. Isn't that it? You know, whatever they may change. More than 8 billion packets wind up in landfills every year, according to a Taco Bell spokesperson. The new campaign is a part of an effort to cut down on waste. All right, I get that, you know. And find a future for single-use food packaging. Can I call it that? They're teaming up with a recycling company called TerraCycle, which has carved out kind of a niche by converting non-recyclable products and waste into raw materials so they can be used as new products. So the Taco Bell says on their website, I looked at it this morning, recycling just got saucy. Now, it may seem a little frivolous to prioritize recycling sauce packets, but consider this. If everybody on the planet, where is it here, recycled one Taco Bell sauce packet, there'd still be another 420 million packets heading to a landfill in an average year. I shouldn't be laughing. It's not that funny. So to divert those packets, Taco Bell at first tried ways to collect, you know, sauces inside the restaurant, the packets. But now with, you know, most of its business being takeaway rather than in-store, they're asking you customers to collect the packets and ship them to a TerraCycle, you know, site using free shipping labels. And when TerraCycle gets the packets, it'll clean them up before melting them down and turning them into plastic so they can be reused again. What are you getting for this? Nothing. Absolutely nothing but the peace of mind of recycling your Taco Bell sauce packets. They're not offering you a bonus, you know, a recycling reward, nothing, not even a free taco. So I don't know how this is going to go down, but there it is, and probably a lot of you are hearing it first. Taco Bell wants your old sauce packets so they can be recycled. I don't know why I think that's funny. And in looking at this story, I was waiting for the punchline this morning. You know, in return, if you turn in 12 sauce packets, you'll get half of a taco or something. Don't you think they should be, you know, enticing you somehow, some way to save your sauce packets? Enough. I wish them success. Okay? Okay. Steve Hilton's coming up. Told you of a couple of things we're going to talk about going on here in the state of California. And one has to do with extending, you know, the COVID bill, you know, for time off, which I wasn't even really all that hip to. But, hey, leave it to us to come up with something like that. And we did. So he's next on News Talk 580, 105.9 KMJ. My Tuesday partner, Mr. Hilton from the California Podcast and also Fox News. You see him a lot on the weekends, although his mug has been all over Fox News today. So he's got something cooking with him. I'll be right back. It's me, Ray Appleton. Yep. Who else?
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.